Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. What a pleasure today, this morning, to have a very, very famous writer with us. It's Ira Berkow. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and he's got a book out. It's called Baseball's Best Ever, A Half Century of Covering Hall of Famers, and really 150 of Ira's best columns and just terrific, terrific stories. But let me tell you about Ira. Are you ready? All right. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner for national reporting and a Pulitzer Prize finalist for a distinguished commentary, and the author of 26 books, including the bestsellers Red, A Biography of Red Smith. That's a terrific one. Maxwell Street, Survival in a Bazaar, and Rockin' Steady, A Guide to Basketball and Cool with Walt Frazier, as well as 10 anthologies of his journalism. He's a sports reporter, and he's been a columnist for the New York Times for over two decades, and his work has been regularly been reprinted in literary anthologies, college rhetoric textbooks, and in the prestigious annual anthology of Best American Sports Writing, and many, many more. Ira, it's great to have you here. It's just a pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, and how nice of you to read all that stuff.
Believe me, I thought it was going to take half the show to do it, but it's well-deserved, and you have such a heart for baseball. Tell us about this book, Baseball's Best Ever. Now, of course, it's your wonderful writing, but why did you put it together? How did it come together, and how did you choose the stories in there?
Well, the subtitle is A Half Century of Hall of Famers, and so the only stories that I have in there are about Hall of Famers who I've interviewed and written columns about, except at the very end, there are six players who I feel should be in the Hall of Fame, but are not for various reasons, including Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, Alex Rodriguez, Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, and they should all have a plaque. And the plaque might say these were bad boys at one point, but their achievements on the diamond were fantastic, you know. So anyway, and especially, you know, someone like Shoeless Joe Jackson has been been out of baseball and has been a bad person in baseball lore since 1920. So it's over 100 years, and that. You know, I mean, there are people in prisons who don't spend 100 years there.
Ira. Let me ask you this, Ira Berkow, with us, and I'd love to get your opinion on it because I take these questions all the time, you know, on the show. Well, the Hall of Fame has that clause and the morality clause and all this. How do you get around that when you talk about people like Pete Rose?
Yeah, well, I think it's a stupid clause. Pete Rose, well, the thing with Pete Rose, for the most part, he bet on baseball when he was a player manager, and he played for what, 26 years or so, 25 years, and for almost his entire career he was upstanding enough that he's the champion of all time. I think if that clause went before a Supreme Court, they may throw it out, you know, because you never know what the Supreme Court's going to do these days. But my point was, they throw out a lot of stuff, and they may have thrown out that clause too. It doesn't deserve to be in there, I don't think. But as long as it is, it's controversial.
Sure. No, I would make the argument it's vague and ambiguous. That would be the legal argument.
Well, those are good. Those are good words.
Good words.
Yeah.
All right. But the book has so many columns that are so much fun and about, as you say, great Hall of Famers. Let's talk about Willie Mays and give us a flavor of these columns. I'll give you some names. You tell me some of the stories. And let's start with Willie Mays, of course, a favorite out here.
Yeah. Well, Willie, a funny story, on induction weekend in Cooperstown, so all the Hall of Famers, most of the Hall of Famers come back, and they greet the new Hall of Famers, and it's a weekend, it's a lovely weekend. But on the Friday night or Saturday night before the Sunday induction, which is outdoors, the the players all gather at the Hall of Fame, the building, and walk around and look at the exhibits for three floors. So one day, and they also they include they add sports writers. So one day I'm walking with my wife Dolly up the stairs, and we see some on the second floor. We see some exhibits, and then on the third floor, we see a full length cutout of Willie Mays making that great catch off Vic Wertz in the 1954 World Series. And it was a long drive and in center field, and he ran with his back to the plate, and he reached up. He didn't even see the ball. He just intuited where the ball was, and he caught it. And anyway, they have a full-length cutout of him in his giant uniform making this catch on the third floor. And so now my wife and I walk down, and guess what we see on the second floor? And it's Willie Mays. I say, Willie, I just saw you upstairs, and now you're in a suit, but it's a different kind of suit than a baseball suit. How did you change clothes so quickly? And he said, "Well, I've always been fast at some things, you know." And so then, as I'm walking away, he was with a friend, and I heard him say to his friend, "Let's go upstairs and see that thing."
He loved it. He loves that picture, and it's a great picture of the catch. Ira Burkow is with us. Ira, yeah. But there was a story about Mays in there that I really liked, about him scoring a run, and Johnny Oates is the catcher. And
yeah.
This is a good one. This is vintage Willie Mays.
Yeah. But Willie, he was, let's see, he was on, I haven't seen that piece in a while, but he was a great base runner. He was a great everything, Willie was. And so I think he was on second base. And there is a hit to right field. And Willie is now, 42 years old and slowing up, but not altogether. And so he rounds on a base hit to right. He rounds third base. And he starts going toward home. The right fielder sees old Willie Mays starting to go home. And this is going to be an easy assist for a putout at home plate. And so the right fielder starts to throw home. And Willie Mays then puts on a spurt as if he's 22 years old. And he slides into home plate and he's safe. I recall that moment. That Willie's skills went just beyond, you know, hitting and catching, and he was a brilliant baseball player, even into his 40s.
It was a fabulous play, and Johnny Oates is the catcher, and the story's terrific. And Willie sort of decoys the right fielder, as you explained, Ira.
Yeah.
Then when he gets to the plate, he lays on top of Oates. And Oates can't get up, and Felix Mejian scores right behind them. How about that for Willie?
Right. Thanks for reminding me. I forgot that. That's right.
I love it.
Willie just spread eagled over Oates, the catcher, and Oates couldn't get up. And Felix Mejian was rounding the bases and came home and scored. Yeah.
Great story about Willie Mays, really. And that's one in here, but there's 150 of them, and they're just terrific. Ira, of course, 1967 to 2022, that's where these columns cover the period of time. There's another one in there, of course, a little bit closer to our heart, and it's Carl Yastrzemski. Of course, Mike Yastrzemski plays for the Giants. But Carl Yastrzemski and Ted Williams, how about that one? That's a good one.
Of course, Yastrzemski was a young player now with the Red Sox, just coming up. In spring training, Williams was a batting coach. And he gave Carl Yastrzemski a piece of advice that Carl Yastrzemski took hold of. No matter what anybody says to you, change nothing about your batting stroke. You know, maybe his stance was a little unorthodox, but the stroke was beautiful.
Boy, and they found Williams, where was he, fishing somewhere, and flew him in, wasn't that it?
Yeah, well, the thing about Williams, not only is he in the Baseball Hall of Fame, he's in the Fisherman's Hall of Fame.
Right.
But, but I found him to be a really an interesting guy and very smart. And in 1968, it was the year of the pitcher, in which I think it was Yastrzemski batted 301 to lead the league in hitting, and Bob Gibson had a 1.12 ERA. And so they in 1969, they lowered the mound to help the hitters. But in spring training, I was working for a newspaper enterprise association, a feature syndicate. I was assigned to go down to Florida and ask if indeed what some people were saying was that baseball was doomed. It was too slow. It paled comparison to football for sure and basketball. And so the question is baseball doomed? And so in spring training at Pompano Beach, Williams was the manager of the Washington Senators at this time. And after a game in this small ballpark, down the left field line was the dressing room. And so I went in and saw Williams. And nearby was an equipment manager, an old guy. Williams greeted me. He didn't know me. And I said, I'm just doing this series, and I'm talking to people about is baseball doomed? Before Williams could say anything, the equipment manager turns around and says, you can't ask Mr. Williams a question like that. Don't you know who you're talking to? You know that kind of thing. And so I was 28, 29 years old. And so I was just, in the presence of Ted Williams. So I was just sort of stunned and speechless. And then the equipment manager turns around and then goes, fixes up his towels. And Williams looks at me and he says, I'm going in to take a shower. And when I come out, I'll answer your questions. I waited. He went in, took a shower. He came back out. He said, everything goes in cycles. This is from Professor Williams. Everything goes in cycles, and baseball will come back. And indeed, it did.
Hmm. Boy, Ted Williams, great, great story. Ira Burkow is with us. Stories like this in the book. It's called Baseball's Best Ever. Of course, we promote our local bookstore, our independent bookstore in Montclair. David at the Book Tree will have it there for sure. Look, there's a Joe DiMaggio story that I read that was very touching about the Yankee Clipper. Joe DiMaggio, of course, from Martinez and played for the Seals, and we call him a Bay Area baseball player.
Right. Well, one of my favorite stories with DiMaggio, I had done a book with Hank Greenberg. I was the sort of the ghostwriter for Greenberg. DiMaggio was aware of this, and DiMaggio loved Greenberg. So one day, it was an old-timers day in Yankee Stadium, and DiMaggio had lunch, and then I joined him in the walk in the bowels of Yankee Stadium to the dugout where he was going to be, as always, announced last, the Joe DiMaggio. And as we're walking, I said, Joe, I have a question that I'd like to ask you. And he said, what's that? The question was going to be about Marilyn Monroe. And it was known that if you mentioned Marilyn Monroe to Joe DiMaggio, he was sensitive about this, and he would never talk to you again. And so I took a chance, and I said, there was a story of you and Marilyn. You're on your honeymoon in 1954. You flew into Tokyo, and the military brass met you as you and Marilyn came down the staircase of the plane. And they asked Marilyn if she would go to Korea to entertain the troops, the American troops there. And so she looked at Joe, and Joe acquiesced and said, okay, go ahead. Marilyn goes, and Joe stays in the hotel. And the next day, Marilyn comes into the hotel room. Joe said, how'd it go? And Marilyn said, Joe, you've never heard such cheering. And he said, yes, I have.
Great. Great comeback. Yes, he has.
I love
it.
But even before that, a guy had a sergeant was a photographer at that point in Tokyo. And he later became a judge magistrate in around Baltimore. And he had these pictures of DiMaggio and Marilyn. And he sent them to me, and just, very nice pictures. And he said, I've always wanted to get to DiMaggio, but I see that you had written a story about him previously on his 70th birthday or whatever. I wrote a column in the New York Times. And he said, so I thought the guy wrote me and said he felt that I had known DiMaggio and would I give him the photographs. And so I did. And I said to DiMaggio, boy, they look great. But she was really very photogenic. And he turned to me and he said, she's a beautiful woman. I mean, this is like breaking news.
Wow. You know? Well, to get Joe to talk about it is unbelievable.
Yeah. But I just, I wanted to verify it, and he did. And that ends one of the columns in the book.
That's great. The columns are terrific. It's baseball's best ever. A half century of covering Hall of Famers. We have a few minutes. Let's just take another one or two. There's a story about Whitey Ford. And this one I really like with Salvador Dali. Come on, how did this come about?
Oh, right. Salvador, they did a commercial for a beer. And the television producers would get very unlikely twosomes to talk about themselves. And in this case, Whitey Ford would talk baseball with the most unlikely source of Salvador Dali. They were filming it in Florida during spring training. And so I was with Whitey Ford and I wrote that story. And it was one of the more unlikely pieces I've ever done. Whitey Ford and Salvador Dali.
Yep. The tagline was, when you got it, flaunt it.
Right. Right. Well, both of them did. Both of them did.
I love it. Very good. All right. One last one. And it's about Babe Ruth. And the book really starts with the Babe Ruth story, and it covers really a gamut of decades of wonderful baseball writing by you. But, of course, the subjects, there's so many decades of subjects here. But there's one about Babe Ruth, and it really, I had never heard this before or even seen an article like this about Babe Ruth. Tell us that one quickly.
You mean about the football game?
Yes, at the Yale Bowl. Yeah. Come on, Babe Ruth and his wife at the Yale Bowl?
Right. Well, the thing is, there was a Yale freshman named Milton White, and he was going to go to the Yale-Harvard game, 1932. He had a date, but it was raining really hard, and then the date didn't show up. And so 18-year-old Milton White decides he has two tickets to the football game, Yale-Harvard, and he just thought, well, how many Yale-Harvard games am I going to see? So he says he's going to go by himself. And so he went, and he had seats in the grandstands, but nobody was sitting in the box except for a handful of people. And so he just moseyed down to the boxes. Right nearby was a couple with a large piece of linoleum covering their heads from the rain. At one point, the man of the couple, kind of a husky guy, calls over to the kid and says, come and sit under our piece of linoleum. You'll get out of the rain. Also, the guy had a jug of whiskey sours. And so they enjoyed a good part of the game, the three of them. It turns out that the husky fellow was Babe Ruth and his wife. But another part of that story, the kid, Milton White, became my English professor at Miami of Ohio, and that's how I knew the story.
Wow. I love it. You have that personal touch to everything, and there's stories about good story, Fergie Jenkins, a very touching story, him, Larry Doby, Mickey Mantle, Lou Boudreau, Jack Brickhouse, Koufax and Greenberg, Reggie Jackson, Mickey Rivers, Jim Murray, Roger Angel. There's so many. Ira, I must tell you, I just pick up a page and start reading it, and it's really a lot of fun, and you did a great job over your whole career. So it's an honor to have you on the show. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, it's an honor to be on the show with you, and I mean, such an in-depth reader. much appreciate.
All right, yeah. Baseball's best ever, a half century of covering Hall of Famers. as I say, the Book Tree up in Montclair, all the usual spots. Ira Berkow, B-E-R-K-O-W. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.